Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units Origins, the weekly spin-off podcast that just won't quit. Dad, this spin-off show was your idea and we are now in the 50s. I mean, we've now done, you know, like I think 56, 57, 58. I should know that number. But we've done a lot of these spin-off episodes. Can I ask you a brutally honest question?
Fire away, Paul.
Okay. Do you prefer the regular Loose Units or do you prefer Loose Ends?
I love them both in their own special way. It's like having children. I don't believe you should have favorites. I think you should love your children equally.
Should.
So if you've got three children, that's 33 1/3 repeater percent.
Yeah.
Per
okay.
child.
So percentage wise, it's far simpler just to have two because then you get an even split, right?
No, it doesn't matter. You can have 10 and each one gets 10%.
Really?
Or 100%.
100% each is, yeah, exactly.
I mean, love is indivisible.
Well,
I mean my point being that we love the three of you kids equally.
Yeah, but in terms of the podcasts, first of all, let's say, I'm trying to figure out if you have a favorite. And I mean, here's the thing. I think they are like different hats. You wear them at different occasions.
I agree. Right? I love them. Oh, look, mate, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I've been tempted to, but I don't want to kind of sully the water, so to speak.
Yeah.
My point being that we have something that I think is relatively unique. I don't think there are too many father and son shows. Should we call it a show?
Well, yeah, father and son, true crime, yeah, comedy.
In the world.
Shows, yeah, yeah.
And you may recall that little event.
In Brisbane.
With a touch of facetiousness, calling it little because it was massive. Mm. There's a reason that you and I were chosen. We've been going a long time. We're no flash in the pan podcast, are we?
No, I'm trying to figure out how many. If anyone has any idea of how many actual hours we've done in this show, I'd be very curious because, I mean, Dad, I'd been in the entertainment industry for years before this show started, and I now strongly suspect that basically everything I've done has been eclipsed in terms of audience numbers and revenue and critical acclaim by this show and by the books. I think, honestly, Loose Units has become kind of the biggest thing.
Hmm. I love it. I don't like to sound melodramatic, and I know that is one of... I am predisposed to being... I'm very excitable.
A little bit.
I'm very passionate.
Uh-huh.
I cannot do anything by halves. Mm. I just can't. From the second I wake up, my brain goes into overdrive.
I pity mum. It sounds exhausting.
Yep. And she likes to sit on the lounge and read.
Yeah.
And she sort of lowers her glasses and looks at me and she says to me, and it's not a question, it's a statement. She says, "You're bored, aren't you?" And the answer is clearly yes. So I'm one of these people that when I'm incredibly busy, and I like to test my mental prowess out, I don't keep a diary. I rely on my limited mental resource, i.e. my brain. And when I'm incredibly busy, and trust me, Paul, I am running a few businesses and doing this. And my life is and it's I'm on, I'm wired 7 days a week. If there were 8 days or 9 days in a week, I'd be working that number of days. I work pretty well all weekends as well, because a lot of my clients, in terms of mainly the antique business, the only time they're home is on the weekends. So I'm just trying to think if there's a point to all this. That's right. So when I'm incredibly busy, I actually dream and fantasize about doing nothing. And then when I'm doing nothing, I'm ready to go, get back on the horse.
Sure.
And
but what is the point of that?
No, but that's how I am. It's, you know how they say that the grass is greener on the other side? Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. How's that? Does that make sense?
Well, I feel like we've got a real Abe Simpson, you know, used to hang an onion on my belt moment going on here. So what I'm going to do is pivot to something that you said to me. You said, okay, Paul, make sure you ask me about someone that got in contact with me this week. And because usually I like to be kind of kept abreast of what is actually happening. If you've got a story, I like to have a bit of prep time so I can kind of basically just go yes or no. Is that appropriate? Is it relevant? Is it fun? Is it going to be easy or hard to kind of put into the show? And you said, Paul, just trust me, it's really good stuff. So I'm really excited to hear what your story is. Now, someone reached out to you. That is cryptic. Can we ask who reached out to you?
Well, can I just preface this by saying the fact that you're excited makes me excited.
Good.
So I'm excited that you're excited.
Great.
And I understand, Paul, and I'm going to make specific reference to all the listeners all over this spherical planet.
Great.
Flying out in the cosmos.
Yep.
At a staggering speed, might I add. So I'm focusing. No, no, it's really important, Paul.
Listen, Carl Sagan.
I want the listeners to understand that it's my point being, Paul, that you are taking a massive leap of faith, and I appreciate that.
Yes, that is true.
Because normally you never, ever let me say things, although when we're live on stage, it's pretty exciting because I actually, you can't just reach over and put a piece of masking tape over my mouth, and I'm sure sometimes you've considered doing that. But, you know, thank you very much for letting me say what I'm about to say.
Thank you for answering a simple question with a 4-minute preamble.
I can't help it. It's just to crawl inside my mind is fucking scary.
You know what's funny is I could cut this entire thing. I just want people to witness what I do every week.
Paul, you're really sweet. I love
you
very much.
No, some weeks you do this. You will do a beautiful, winding, largely pointless but earnest setup, and then the story starts, and I just drag my mouse across the waveform.
Paul, do not say that to me. That is sacrilege. My words are golden.
No, Dad, here's the thing. So, like, I believe in all killer, no filler, right? And I think that your stories are great. But sometimes I just enjoy, you know, I mean, because if people are doing a commute and the story starts as they're getting off the train, because yeah, I just, you know, I'm just aware of that stuff. But honestly, Loose Ends is meant to be a real unvarnished look at us. And I think as a result, I'm going to keep all of this in. Because, you know, I mean, something I noticed, Dad, is that people, and I said this on stage at the Acast event, people feel like they know us. And the reason they do is because they have heard us talk openly and honestly and in a fairly unfiltered format for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. They probably know us better than some people we are friends with in real life because, let's face it, our friends don't let us just sit down and talk at them for hours at a time. So I think it's important that people hear a kind of unfiltered version of the show. That's why I'm keeping this in. With that in mind, oh my God, how many minutes has this been going for? This is about 9 minutes with no stories. So, Dad, if you would please begin the first story of this episode of Loose Ends.
Well, there was an incident, and I'm not sure where it is, Paul, in terms of what book it's in or whether it's been a previous podcast, but it's the story about one night I was working at Mossman.
Yeah.
With a fucking great guy. He was senior to me. Really, really good. And I've got a feeling there's a chapter perhaps about this story, but it's the night that we went to a Signal One in French's Forest. Is that ringing any bells?
Signal One, what does that mean? Is that Officer in Trouble?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it ringing any bells?
Yes, it is. It is ringing some bells. I know that listeners have a really keen ear for this stuff.
So on that fateful night, hot summer's night.
Yeah.
Picture this massive party on the northern beaches. When I say big party, I'm talking well over, between 100 and 200 people. Mid to late teens and some early 20s. In a relatively respectable, if you can say that. I don't think you can say that about any suburb these days. There's a dark side to every suburb in this country. So what happens, there's a police officer working at French's Forest Police Station, which, funnily enough, is across the road from the party. So he starts getting calls from neighbours. It's clearly out of control.
Yeah.
And he's working... He's the only police officer in the station. He does something on that fateful night that is incomprehensible if you look at it from sort of above and think, wow, that's pretty amazing, in that he grabbed a radio. He didn't tell anyone. He left the station unattended. Wow. Just think about that. And... he went across the road and he walked. So imagine one police officer going into a party that's clearly out of control, and he asks them, could they please tone it down? Well, the reaction was to get around him, some of the more wild people, and they decided to bash him. And as they were bashing him and beating the shit out of him, he managed to call a Signal One. And in that fateful moment, and it was fairly crackly as it came across, all police on that frequency, which is basically the entire... I mean, it covers a massive, massive area. And, you know, sometimes at VKG they used to combine districts.
So, but what do you say when you're doing a Signal One, when you're reporting it? Like, do you say officer in trouble?
You give your call sign.
Yeah.
And you say Signal One and the location.
Okay.
You have to be very, very concise.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't fuck around. You don't explain to them what's happening to you. And yeah. You don't call a Signal One unless you're in imminent danger of the most horrendous level, where potentially you could get killed. I've only ever heard a few Signal Ones, and it's the sort of thing you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
And it really is very upsetting. And what VKG do is that they then have that system with the beeps. You know how they put a normal job over, no beep, one beep sort of gets your attention, two, shit, that's pretty heavy. And there are only, to my knowledge, back when I was in the police force in the 1980s, there were only two incidents on the entire network that sort of... you'd get three beeps. So imagine three, and you'd always be in the car listening or in the station, because every station had a loudspeaker system. So you'd always hear. I mean, sometimes in Sydney and probably Melbourne, you'll see if you're, like, we live near a pretty dynamic police station, i.e. King's Cross.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can just be strolling in the vicinity and you will actually see police charge, literally run and bolt out of the station en masse, and plainclothes police as well. Hop into their respective cars, and off they go. Now, they've heard something on the speaker system within the station. Mm-hmm. And I guess wherever you are in the station, if you're on the shit house, you know, you should be able to hear what's going down. So you hear the beep, you hear two beeps, and then in that terrible, terrible moment, if you hear three. Now, three beeps back in the 80s, only two things. An aircraft emergency. I mean, think about that. A major, major airport emergency. Something catastrophic's about to happen with a plane.
Yeah.
Or a Signal One. They're the only two things that get the three beeps. And the three beeps came across. But the worst thing about this Signal One is that you could actually hear the police officer basically going down. And
yeah, see, now it's at this point, I'm convinced that you have told this story before, but Why are you bringing this up now? Why this story now?
Well, last week,
yeah.
The police officer that I was working with that night, he reached out to me. I ended up calling him, and his name's Chris. That's his real name. That's fine to use his real name. And he was a great, great police officer. What I would describe as a great general duties police officer. The sort of guy or girl, but the sort of officer that you wanted to be with when the shit hit the fan. And he and I, he was the senior man on the car.
Yep.
And we headed over to that suburb. And I know we have discussed various aspects of what happened that night. And so far, you know, there'll be listeners going, well, okay, yeah, we've heard this part of the story. And for those of you that haven't, you know, we basically drove at breakneck speed. Yep. Faster than you'd ever drive to any other job. A signal one is literally, you have to get there. And you're imagining what's happening to that poor police officer on the ground, basically having his head kicked in. And once they'd beaten the shit out of this police officer, they then threw him into a swimming pool. And so if he's unconscious, he's going to drown. And
what is the... I don't mean to sound naive, but the actual... I mean, if you are at a party and you're beating the shit out of a cop and then you throw them in a pool... and you're peripherally aware that they could drown, at which point you've killed a police officer. Like, I do not see any version of reality in which they didn't intend to commit serious harm. You couldn't just laugh that off as a kind of boys will be boys bullshit, right?
I agree with you. Mm.
Yeah.
But, you know, the murder thing is that would be very, very difficult. Very yes. difficult to prove. But definitely manslaughter. Mm. And they might say, look, he managed to get up and he just crawled and he just kind of was unsteady on his feet and he just fell into the pool. You know, and in that situation, you're probably going to have witnesses that are all going to sort of corroborate each other.
Right.
So, you know, there was a lot of emotion. There were police cars coming in. There would have been, for a signal one back then, there would have been maybe 40 police cars coming in.
Are you sure? Look, I'm not... I mean, 40 seems like a lot.
No, mate. Pretty well every police officer within at least a 10 to 15K radius. That's a lot of police. Maybe 20K.
Is it fair to say that Highway Patrol would want a piece of the action?
Oh, every single police officer on... In fact, that particular station,
yeah.
French's Forest, it is a base station for Highway Patrol.
Okay.
So they would have all been out on the road.
Yep.
And they've got pursuit cars, and when they put their foot down, they move those cars.
Yeah, okay.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, UnitedHealthcare insurance plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about UnitedHealthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
So what we wanted is, we wanted a massive police presence. But what happened was, everyone at the party, they're shitting themselves. Mm. They are aware of something really bad. There would have been a lot of people at that party that were really decent people. And horrified.
Now, yeah, so just the version you told before is that you said that basically cops chased people into the street and
correct.
Just kind of went hog wild on them. Yeah. And I raised the kind of moral quandary of, yeah, but what if, you know, what if like Anne was at a party like that and she kind of got scared and ran and then some cops kind of, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you're right, Paul. But look, you have to take into consideration the entire event. It's a hot summer's night. Police are basically risking their lives at a very, very high level in terms of the way they're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to a scene, what they see is people running. And they think, shit, this is, you know, and who's the offender? Why are they running? I mean, it gets out of control.
So what I would ask now, Dad, is what's the new aspect to this story?
Mm. Well, I witnessed my colleague. You know, exercising summary justice, let's put it that way, at a fairly sort of intense level. And here's the crux of the story, Paul. He told me last week that he was dragged before internal affairs, and I've been before internal affairs, and it's fucking horrific,
mm-hmm.
okay? And when he was being interrogated at internal affairs in the New South Wales Police Force back in the 80s over this event,
mm-hmm.
they said to him, they indicated, you know, what had I seen? And I'd seen everything. And they said, okay, so we're going to be bringing him in as a, you know, to interrogate, you know, Constable Verhoeven. And Chris said, sorry, he wasn't with me. He was by the car. He didn't see anything. He covered my fucking ass that night. But the point being,
yeah,
he did certain things that I saw, okay, and he saved me from going through the drama of being interrogated. Because if you're interrogated at internal affairs, your future police career, I mean, worst case scenario is you get the sack. So instead of him putting me in a compromising situation where I had to, well, what would I have done at internal affairs? I don't know, because I didn't go.
Yeah, you would either have had to say what you saw
or lie
about it. I just need to pause here because it sounds like what you saw was a police officer assaulting somebody.
Mm. I did, yep.
I'm not super okay with that.
No. Well, anyway, that was the night and...
Sorry, we can't just brush this off. This is a potentially problematic thing because people trust you as someone who had a kind of moral compass. So for you to kind of go, well, you know, that's what it was like. I mean, that's I find that a little troubling. Could you put it in some more context?
Well, in this particular case, a particular offender, or because it could be one of the actual people that had bashed this police officer, he was running away and my colleague and I, we were shouting to this guy to stop and he wouldn't. And my colleague chased after him. And you're allowed to use batons, but in a very specific way. You weren't allowed. There were lots of places on the body when we were taught how to use a baton that you weren't allowed to, obviously, you know, head, you know, bones, etc. But you were allowed to sort of come in from behind. And what my colleague did is that he was sort of running alongside him, but the guy clearly was not going to stop. And they ran into a school. And they were kind of, this guy just kept running. And then my colleague sort of used his baton on the back of his sort of legs and he basically just knocked him down. But in a sort of a, not a, there was no injury. It was under the circumstances 100% acceptable. It was either that or crash tackle him. I mean, you are allowed to actually chase people and, you know, however, sort of get them down and then arrest them. You with me? You can't just say to someone, oh, stop, and, oh, okay, no, yeah, he's not stopping, I'll just let him go. That's not how it works. That is not policing. Policing is to chase an offender and then, I mean, I don't like using the phrase take them down because that sounds pretty heavy, but you have to arrest them. You have to stop them. You have to immobilize them. You have to cuff them. You have to bring them back to the car. You then have to convey them if they've done, you know, committed an offence,
mm-hmm.
and then you take them back to the police station, and then you, you process them. And
but the version you're describing is the kind of boilerplate. All right, you grab the suspect, you know, you kind of subdue them, and then you that's the by the book version. But you use
everything
the phrase,
was
you use the phrase summary justice, and that seemed to imply to me that he kind of went in pretty hard, probably because he was all riled up because there was an officer that had been hurt. But also, I mean, if you don't know this is the person who did it, then enacting kind of your anger about an assaulted officer on just someone who ran, which is a reasonable response under the circumstances, by the way, then that seems like excessive. And it seems like the kind of thing that I would want you to tell internal affairs about. So could you kind of just, like, what do you mean when you say summary justice?
Well, just the way he took him down.
You said it was reasonable. You said he did it in the back on the back of the legs, and that was a reasonable thing.
Definitely reasonable to stop the offender or the person.
So I'm saying what happened next that made it internal affairs worthy?
Well, this guy made allegations, but as it turns out, the allegations were thrown out. But because you have what are called sort of, you know, vexatious allegations where people just hate police, and God knows there are people like that out there, and then you go through the process, and internal affairs then have to weigh up all the evidence, and they found that he had acted reasonably that night, but he'd sort of spared me the drama. So that if I had have gone to internal affairs, I would have basically said everything that I've said to you now,
yes,
and explained it in. But of course, being almost 40 years ago, you know, it could have been slightly different in terms of my memory, but I have a fairly clear memory of, you know, what he did. But
so why did you say summary justice?
Well, perhaps that was perhaps a bit of an overreaction because there was no sort of assault or anything like that.
So, okay, so if you're giving let's say I'm internal affairs, right? Myself and the listeners are internal affairs. And we say, junior constable, were you a junior constable at this point?
Oh, yeah, very, very.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so junior constable Hoven, how's it going, mate? We're internal affairs. Listen, could you please give us just the facts. We want like a just the facts breakdown of what happened once your colleague reached the suspect. What would you say? Because you wouldn't do it in the way you're doing it for us, because now you're telling a story. If you're doing the police version, how cold and clinical is it? Do you literally say things like, he approached at a 45-degree angle, he struck once on the back of the legs, the suspect went... So could you give us that version?
Well, I'd just say probably that we, you know, attended a certain incident, so there'd be a lot of detail around that.
Yep.
Then you'd say that my colleague, you know, asked or shouted out to the alleged offender, you know, person sort of running away, you know, to stop, which he failed to do. My colleague ran up alongside him, had his baton in probably his right hand, and then used the baton at the back of his legs. Offender fell to the ground. Partner then reached down, cuffed him, got him up, conveyed him back to the police car. I don't quite remember what happened after that. I don't recall.
But what you're saying is there was no point where basically because he was mad, he laid
in. No. This police officer he's, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, there were a lot of people around as well. Not saying that that's why, but, you know, police, generally speaking, police back in the 80s, you know, we do know in the story, in the book Loose Units, you know, I worked with some police that were, you know, pretty... did all sorts of things that were, some of them just didn't care. They were just, but this guy's a really, really nice guy, like a really, you know, in fact, I'd even describe him as gentle and decent. But, you know, you had to sort of be there on the night. That's one of the, not problems, but the thing about the judicial system as well is that police react a certain way in certain situations. And then, of course, when they go to court and they're sitting in a very clinical environment, almost austere, perhaps in front of a jury of 12, you know, it's very, very different to that environment to actually being there on the night or the day. And, it's very, It's very difficult to sort of compare the two situations. You know what I mean? It's like they can be very analytical in a court of law, and I guess it's probably the best system we've got. But yeah, it was. But anyway, it was very, very lovely of him to reach out, and I thought that was a good story.
So, would you say that it was dealt with in a reasonable way?
Yeah, under the circumstances, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
But I remember. I had to go to internal affairs a few times.
Really?
Well, what about the time when my buddy later on? Oh, we'll come to that later. It's in the book, but you remember, Len Beater.
I actually didn't know that you had to go to internal affairs regarding Len. I didn't know that.
Is it in the book or...?
No, the internal affairs part isn't. The thing that gets you to internal affairs, the thing that Len did that was deeply fucked, that is coming up soon in this podcast.
Cool.
That's not...
Look, remember that Christine worked for internal affairs, Paul?
Yes. Which, by the way, Mum is very reticent to talk about.
Yeah, because it was totally ineffective.
Right, okay.
Internal affairs was a bit of a joke, but that's a whole thing. But I worked with a sergeant at North Sydney Police Station, and every time, and I don't want it to sound as though he went to internal affairs regularly, but if the New South Wales Police Force were out to get you, one of the ways they could totally ruin you was to basically just invent trumped-up charges by an anonymous member of the public.
Yep.
Submit a report that didn't. Yep. This person didn't even exist, and you would end up in internal affairs. And this particular sergeant, every time he went to internal affairs, he would sit on the floor in the office being interrogated with his back up against the wall. And the reason he did that is that he was paranoid about the police, the internal affairs, who are all detectives, might I add, and supposedly very, very good at what they do. He was always concerned they'd kick the chair from underneath him while he was sitting and he'd fall to the ground.
Mm.
So he always sat on the floor. I mean, is that not incredible?
Yeah.
And I think it was internal affairs in name only. And yes, I did go to internal affairs a few times. And of course, it's on your record forever. And it's not a good place to go to. And being a junior police officer, being interrogated by guys that are the equivalent of senior, say, homicide detectives. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm. I guess there's no way for people to know what you said when you were in there as well. So if they see you coming out of internal affairs, they can easily say,
exactly.
Well, there's every chance that he was kind of a snitch when you
Oh, look, it's just horrific.
Yeah.
And
snitches get stitches.
Well, we are going to talk about my buddy, but not when he was my buddy, when later on when I was just a... In fact, it's a terrible story, and yes, I did go, and we'll talk about that another time.
Okay. All right. Well, that was a really, contentious... I mean, do you feel like... I mean, I hope I wasn't too hard on you. I just wanted to I wanted to make sure that you weren't kind of accidentally telling us a story about the time you saw an assault and didn't report it, basically. And it sounds like that's not what that was.
No. Not in the slightest. Just a technique that was used that night that... I mean... You know, a few times I'd be chasing people. And in fact, once in a cemetery, I chased a guy on a motorbike.
Mm.
And I basically lunged and basically took him out. And I was basically flying through the air. And it was horrendously dangerous what I did. But when the adrenaline's pumping, you do things that are from a very calm perspective, i.e. in court, it could almost seem insane. But I thought, hang on a sec, I just can't get this guy. I cannot catch him. And he was sort of in and out of all the tombstones. It was almost comical. But he'd done a break and enter, and I just basically thought, I've got to do something. And when I took him off the bike, and it was pretty dangerous for both of us, but then his motorbike then went off and crashed into a tombstone. I mean, it's a whole, like, you just don't know what's going to happen. Imagine if...
Hang on. Have I heard this story before?
Maybe not.
I don't... Can you... Just listeners, please, if we don't tell a story involving Dad tackling a guy with a motorbike and a tombstone as kind of the ingredients in the story, please, please tell us, because shit, I didn't know that story.
No, I mean, there are stories from the vault that I still... That's fascinating, isn't it? How you've always felt, Paul, and always said to me, almost dogmatically, that, Dad, you've got more stories, and I continually say, no, not possible. And I sometimes, when I'm driving in the ute, I think, and I'm sort of almost desperate for another story. And then all of a sudden...
Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Loose Ends, but I really enjoyed it. That was... I mean, that went some... You're right, it went some places, you know. I mean, we talked about internal affairs, we talked about, you know, how to arrest someone, and we talked about, I guess, dobbing on people as a kind of... Because at high school, yeah, any time someone was bullying me or assaulting me, which happened a, like a bit, the threat was, don't tell anyone. The threat was, you know, don't fucking snitch. And I always thought, well, yeah, because if I tell people, you'll do it more. But then I should have probably doubled down and gone, yeah, but you're doing it anyway. So why, you know, it's so hard. And if you're in the police force, I guess it's a lot scarier because there are very few things scarier than bent cops. So, I mean, internal affairs seems like a thing that should exist and should be like psychotically effective and incredibly diligent. But because of the nature of power, I guess it's really tricky.
And also, and also there are groups within society that say, why on earth would you have police investigating police?
In an external body, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but you know, this is a very, very... It opens up a can of worms.
Yeah.
You need very, very experienced investigators.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in my class of 171... One of the guys in my class, he was an ex-Vietnam helicopter pilot.
Yeah.
And he went on to become a helicopter pilot in the air wing, but he still had to go through everything that we did.
Right.
As was the case with forensics, and as is not the case now, where you go to university, you study forensics, then you can slot in and become a crime scene investigator, but you're not a police officer. Mm. Now, there are two schools of thought about that. You know, it was on-the-job training when I was in the police force.
Yeah.
Because it helps you understand the organization, how it works, but it also helps you understand how, although this is going to sound a bit, I guess, I don't think I could back this up with evidence, empirical evidence, but the thing is, you know, who makes the better investigator? Someone that's been on the street in amongst the, you know, the grubby world of... I mean, imagine undercover police. Imagine what that's like.
Yeah.
You kind of go deep cover and you kind of, you know, you become sort of a part of that world. I mean, and then you are extricated from that world, and then you go to court and you're sitting there in your suit and you're... It's kind of... You've taken on another persona, and look, it gets very, very tricky.
Yeah.
And I understand... Wherever you've got extreme emotion, it's tough. And,
yeah. Look, it's very fraught, and obviously it's, you know, I mean, it's probably worth us having like a more in-depth discussion about this stuff later on, but we are gearing up for some big, big, big chapters coming up, Dad. I would say all the really heavy hitting stories are coming up over the coming months. So we're going to kind of get together this weekend in person, which is going to be great. You and Mum are coming to stay in Melbourne, which is exciting. And we will probably record an episode in person on Monday. So Monday's episode of Loose Units Proper will be an actual in-person record, which is really exciting. And we will see you next week for more Loose Units. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Cheerio.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.